Force field is at 25% strength.
Booster ignition is go.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Delphi Podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, and I help lead Delphi Ventures, as well as host some of the most in-the-weeds and thought-provoking guests across crypto, spanning Layer 1s to DeFi, NFTs, and beyond. The goal is to have fun, but also to dive deep and offer foundational episodes on projects and founders. Also, check out our research on Delphi Digital, or miss out on the most compelling research there is. It's up to you. As a reminder, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token, or to make any financial decisions. Delphi Ventures may hold tokens mentioned, so check out our transparency page in the show notes for more info. With that, let's dive in. See you guys on the other side.
Auto sequence start in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Before we jump in, we want to thank the Cosmos community for their sponsorship in making this episode possible. There are several projects building inter-blockchain communication protocols, but there's one that's currently built. Cosmos.network is on a mission to link every blockchain. Well-known projects like Terra, Band, Kava, and Secret use Cosmos and the Cosmos Hub to connect to every other chain in their network. The Cosmos Hub is completed and launched, and you could visit cosmos.network today to check it out. The Cosmos Hub brings us that much closer to Web 3.0, and we thank the Cosmos community for sponsoring the Delphi Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy. I'm one of the podcast hosts, and I help lead Delphi Ventures. Today, I'm thrilled to have on Seb Audette, who's the co-founder and CEO of Zapper. I met Seb around a year ago when we first launched our fund, so it's really awesome to have him on. Seb, how's it going?
Doing pretty good. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, Seb, Zapper's come a long way. I'd love to hit off just from the get-go. Do you ever envision Zapper to be what it is today when you originally founded it? I mean, DeFi and tracking has come quite a long way from how we used to track our assets.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that initially, we had this grand vision that we would get to this point. We never really expected that it would grow so quickly. But the way we kind of saw it from the beginning is, what's a big problem in DeFi in a small market that we think is going to be very big in the future? And if we kind of rewind DeFi, right? Initially, there were very few protocols, you know, maybe 6 or 7. You know, you had the big ones, Aave, Compound, Synthetix, Uniswap. And it was just very annoying for me to have to track them individually and kind of update my spreadsheet. And so we built this solution with Zapper where you could track a very minimal amount of protocols. I think the first use case was just Uniswap and Synthetix, and it was geared really towards the Synthetix user base because there was a shared incentive between these two protocols. So very small market, but it was a big problem. And yeah, I just shared it in the Discord. And I mean, it just snowballed from there. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously never expected to have this amount of growth, but we did know that we were tackling a very important problem in a small market that would become big in the future.
You lobbing out the Synthetix comment on them basically being the first ones to roll out yield farming just shows how much of an OG you are.
Yeah, it's the OG yield farm.
Yeah, most people think it's Compound, but that's, I mean, they maybe got public about it, but can you just share how people track their assets before Zapper? Like, I mean, you know, back when I first started in crypto, like it was all Google Sheets, pass around Excel files, stuff like that. There really was no way to track any of this, right?
Yeah. And even if we rewind back, I mean, it's still very popular, right? But Blockfolio, you have to manually input every token you add and input every transaction. There's nothing automated from it. So like that's the default, I'd say, use case for still most people in crypto to kind of manage their portfolio. But the issue with DeFi is very programmatic. It's very automatic. So Blockfolio doesn't fit at all the use case for DeFi. Most people are using spreadsheets, going daily on every kind of website or like looking at their Etherscan and updating it. I think there was Zerion at that time, but Zerion kind of had just a very singular focus of having just lending and pooling in one platform. They weren't looking to track all the assets everywhere. And I think there was the other app called MyDeFi, very OG app that was trying to track all your assets. But I was just kind of frustrated by it not tracking my own apps. And so I was like, it's just a very uncomfortable feeling to not be able to see your money. You don't feel good. It's like, did I lose something? Like, did my portfolio just like crash? And so it was just so frustrating that I had to solve it. And that was really just the initial use case. So Yeah, I mean, spreadsheets, Xerion, and a few other apps that kind of tried to tackle that problem.
Yeah, you're right with most winning CEOs where the project they launches is to solve, you know, a problem they already have. I mean, that's Andre with Yearn. That's, you know, most major successful founders. I guess the other question for you is when you were starting Zapper, I guess at the time, one of the thoughts on the other side, like playing devil's advocate was, hey, you know what? The wallets will just track your assets. Like you don't really need this external service to do it. Did you ever have a view that, hey, you know what I'm building might just be, you know, automatically shown by someone's wallet, or what was the give and take there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm kind of impatient in nature, so I couldn't wait after a wallet integrating it. Like I couldn't wait a week or be in kind of the doubt that, oh, maybe eventually they'll track it. Like I had to see it like right now. And that was kind of like the original thesis is like the like we know how uncomfortable it is for users to not be able to see their money. And so we kind of pinned as the most important like product value for Zapper is like people want to see their money. If they can't see it, they're one, going to be uncomfortable. And two, it's like an exit door that you create for them to use another product. And so that's always been like a main point of focus. And that's the main reason why we did Zapper. It was just very uncomfortable. I couldn't wait for another product to do it. We had to do it ourselves.
That's really cool. No, that's a great answer. And I guess one of the issues in crypto is building a community. You know, community is everything. They're the ones that'll take your project to the next level. They're the talent, whether it be, you know, token econ to community building, brand building, etc. You guys have been able to attract an insane amount of users. I'll let you share the growth. I don't want to steal your thunder here. But one of the things that you were able to do was you were able to attract such a large number of users without having a token, which is kind of insane because most communities are built with a token because people have a shared sense of buy-in and they obviously have upside in the token, stuff like that. How the hell were you able to get so many users without a token?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually surprised myself how well this is going, but like I could kind of outline the strategy and the reasons why we were able to grow. So right now we're at about 240,000 monthly active users.
Jesus.
And yeah, the initial growth hack, honestly, and it was initially was an unintentional growth hack, is that when you say we initially have like four or five protocol integrations, every time you add a new protocol integration, we'd go in their Discord, we would share it, the protocol would share it, their community would share it. And that's kind of like just a really good way of acquiring new users. And we did that for such a long time that we built a very strong user base that's very loyal. They know that we're going to add a new protocol when it appears. And every time we add a new protocol, we kind of get exposed to a new community. And that's been super helpful. And I think a huge element that helps, and it's retention. Like retention is so important in DeFi. If you want to grow and you don't have retention, you're not going to grow. Like you need to have this floor of users that will consistently stay on your app. Like regardless of time, like they'll be there in a month, 2 months, 3 months. And what that means is that every new, you know, big batch of users that you add, you know for sure that a good chunk of them are going to stay. And that's like a core pillar of growing. And I don't think enough DeFi projects are focused on retention. For Zapper, as kind of like a side effect, right? Tracking your portfolio is something that's embedded in kind of our daily lives. It's something we'll do on a daily basis, even like an hourly basis for some. I don't know for you, but for me, I definitely check it almost every hour.
It's bookmarked for me, man. All my wallets. Yeah.
Exactly. So the product is very aligned with, you know, our retention strategy. So it's something you do on the daily. But say transactions, for example, like we were struggling to get people from just tracking their assets to actually transacting. So we're working on different strategies to help them kind of discover and kind of retain them using other strategies. So, I mean, the number one thing that's most important is figuring out a way to retain your users. If you don't have that, you won't have any growth. And I think a lot of DeFi projects are kind of just focused on acquiring all their users right now through a token. And it works for like the initial 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or month, or a few months. They get a big community, but it dies off because there's no retention built in the product.
No, you're totally right, Seb. I mean, one of the things I didn't pick up originally when we invested in you guys was just that you never needed a token to grow because this was something that retail would need regardless of a token. I mean, it seems so simple in hindsight, but
you don't need a token to attract people to something that they're going to natively need every day.
Exactly. Like having a token won't necessarily make people, it won't necessarily correlate to people being able to see their money. Like end of day, people want to see their money. If they can't, they're not going to use it regardless if we have a token or not.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I guess one of the key, I guess, cornerstones of Zapper is just the amount of protocols, apps, integrations, Zaps you guys have. And it feels like adding new applications that you're able to track through Zapper is obviously crucial to growth and the uptake of the platform. But it also seems like a crazy operational hurdle to not only keep adding these integrations, but maintaining them and now adding new chains and adding all the apps within those chains. How do you hire for that? How do you maintain it? How do you keep that integration speed?
Yeah, it's honestly, it's something that's very hard. Obviously, we're struggling with, but it's a very unique problem that Zapper has. I could count on my hand the amount of products that are kind of in the same boat. But for us, like a lot of it has been about figuring out a way to automate those new protocol integrations. But a lot of it is like definitely something we can do better is figure out a more transparent way of, you know, you have community deciding on the protocol integrations and us, you know, delivering them. And right now, you know, it's not fully fluid between the votes on the community. Obviously, one, it's very gameable. Like people can vote and have bots upvote protocol integrations. And two, on our side, we have to juggle between how easy is this protocol to integrate and how many like community backing does this protocol have? And we have to kind of juggle. And sometimes we'll take the easier one that has less backing than like the really hard one that, you know, still has a lot of backing. So a lot of a juggling act, but every new hire, engineer hire, like the first 2 weeks is just doing protocol integrations. Like that's kind of like your Zapper initiation. And after 2 weeks, I'd say like they become already pretty good. They're already way better than me. They can ship protocol integrations much faster. And we're actually, you know, starting to build that automated strategy to actually be able to push them out even faster. And also that brings to kind of those community incentives and, you know, our app store that we're building right now.
That's awesome, Seb. And I guess one of my next questions for you is that automating, adding new applications to track new layer ones, all of their apps seems incredible, right? And it definitely seems like something that should be automated or you eventually outsource this to the teams themselves. It doesn't seem like there'll ever be an issue with, say, tracking if other protocols integrate. But do you have any concerns on decentralizing away or outsourcing or automating like the Zapper farm feature on Zapper, like where people are actually moving funds around? Because, you know, then you run into a situation where, you know, people could lose funds if they're sent to the wrong contracts, people could steal funds. How do you decentralize that and scale it while having, you know, the gatekeeper of you guys?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And kind of to summarize, like there's two aspects, as you pointed out, like there's the protocol integration where you can read your balances, but there's also our Zaps, which are transactional in nature and allows you to easily go into a Uniswap pool, for example, or a SushiSwap, whether it's on Polygon or Ethereum. And they're very different. And one can be automated with less risk, right? The risk is that people can't accurately see their balances because the protocol integration wasn't properly done. But we can't afford for that to happen on the transactional side. So what we see to shift more towards the community is really the balance side of things, so tracking your portfolio. And the Zaps would be more of like this internal toolbox of things that we build. They're connectors for protocols. They're battle tested. And then developers could leverage them and build. They can use our kind of Legos that we already built. Also kind of offset the audit risk because all those kind of Zap Legos, right? Those transaction connectors would all be pre-audited and it would just become a game of like putting them together and trying stuff out. But the strategy, definitely, we want to be very careful with Zaps because obviously the risk is much higher and it's not a risk we want to, it's a risk we can't afford basically.
No, I agree. Zaps are crucial. Less people kind of do the next step beyond just tracking their portfolio. It lets them, you know, do things with other platforms or protocols. So definitely understand why you're protective of it. And I'm glad you are. Just before we go into the future of Zapper, I just want to go back again on the history side of things. Because it's always interesting to hear like founders that have overcome issues. And I'm not sure if you have any in the past, but were there any cases in Zappr's history where you're like, you know, damn, I don't know if this is going to work, or, you know, hell, I don't have the right talent, or I don't have the right money. You know, what was the hardest, I guess, thing you had to overcome in the earlier days of Zappr?
I would say it's interesting because Zappr's history is, it's like we've been here for a year and a half. I first started
10 years
like
in crypto.
Exactly. It feels like 10 years. But like the initial MVP of Zappr, like a precursor to Zappr DeFi Snap, I actually started it 2 years ago. But I'd say like the toughest part. So I was working as an engineer slash designer hybrid at ShakePay, which is like the biggest Canadian exchange. And while I was there, that's where I really started experimenting with DeFi. And I had this thing called DeFi Snap. And it was going very well, getting some traction. And in March, that's when the pandemic hit and we had DeFi Black Thursday. And that's when I put in my resignation for ShakePay. And I was like, I'm doing this full time. I really believe in this. And through there, I met Suhail, Nodar, and there we founded Zappr. So I'd say like, that was probably like one of the toughest decisions. My girlfriend was like, what the hell? You're completely crazy. And like, I had a few startups in the past and they all failed. And so it was like March, DeFi was crashing. We had that whole Maker fiasco, right? And we had COVID. I didn't have that much money saved. I decided to just go full time because that's what I wanted to do. And I just believed it. And I didn't see myself working at ShakePay because I was just going to be, you know, thinking about DeFi all the time anyway and thinking about Zappr. And so I'd say that was the most difficult time for me. It was actually like the inception period. But I mean, from there, been relatively, you know, smooth sailing.
Yeah, I kind of understand why your girlfriend was a little freaked out that you left a job, there was a sell-off, you didn't have a lot of money saved. That kind of makes some sense now.
Yep. No, I mean, totally understand. But I mean, she was always very supportive. I think it's so important to have a supportive network around you to help. And I'm very fortunate she was super supportive.
It's a podcast for another day, but I just saw that Harvard study. Someone tagged me on that study over 100 years with the 700 successful people. And the whole thing is just having, quality relationships and love and who you're with. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
So Seb, this is kind of a good kind of segue into the future of Zappr. So you left a job, you know, diving into crypto full time. It's hard for people to do that today because they don't know where to go. But with Zappr, you guys launched Quests and Education, and it's a really cool way to kind of educate people, attract them, show them DeFi in one place. I know I still don't have, you know, one thing I send people. I basically say, you know, send $100 of ETH, well, 500 depending on fees, to MetaMask and mess around with everything on DeFi Pulse. But what exactly is the whole idea around education and Quests with Zappr?
Yeah, so the idea is right now, you probably agree, it feels like DeFi is this big secret that we all have, and we're trying to broadcast it to the world. And somehow there's some friction around communication. Like, it's really hard to broadcast the value of DeFi, you know? And until they actually try it, that's when it really clicks. And so the idea, and what's been successful for me, and I don't know for you, but what's been successful is actually going through MetaMask, doing it with them, and then it clicks. And then they're like, oh, wow, this is actually really interesting. It's usually not from sending them a bunch of articles. Like, it really depends. The most effective way is actually just having them do it. And the idea with Zappr Learn and gamification and Quest is actually creating that engaging learning experience where you learn and actually do the thing like right after. So you have an article on what is a Uniswap. You learn about Uniswap, and then you have a quest to add liquidity. And there's an interesting, I don't remember who shared it. I think it was 0x Maki, but it might not be him. And actually, I don't think it's him. Anyways, about people entering into DeFi, there's like this really big knowledge gap. And if your willingness to enter DeFi is below that knowledge gap, it's just going to be too much friction. But gamification And fun basically is like this, it's like this lubricant on this gauge, right? It's this padding. It makes it more welcoming and accessible to actually start learning and do stuff. And that's been our whole angle. And because Zapper's mission is to make DeFi accessible and easy to use, if it has to be accessible and it has to be fun. And that's the whole reason why we've been focusing on that aspect. And so far it's been pretty successful.
So Seb, I guess a lot of this will probably be for younger users, you know, Web3 native people, if that's even a thing yet. But do you think that, you know, I saw a video today on Twitter of like some senator saying we should ban crypto to keep up with China, which has got to be the dumbest take in crypto's history. But if you sent Zapper's quests to, let's say, a large traditional macro fund, or let's say a senator or a congressman or something like that, do you think that they would also be able to understand DeFi in a better way?
I'd probably say they wouldn't be the target market. I think it might actually be not, like, least helpful for them, because it might be like, why mixing games and finance? Those two things should not belong together. But maybe I'm wrong. Like, I think like my hypothesis is really around young people and engaging them in finance. Like, we've had this generation of people, and there's a reason why meme stocks are a thing, is because we have this people that are just disillusioned completely by traditional finance. They've kind of felt left out. They have huge debt. And, you know, it's just, like, meme stocks are kind of like this middle finger towards traditional finance. And to engage them in finance, you kind of have to go completely 180 from what traditional finance used to represent. It didn't used to represent fun. So you kind of have to go a complete 180 to be able to talk to that demographic. And
no, you're right. I'm grasping at straws trying to figure out how we convince the older people with all the money to do this. But you're right on the younger demographic. I mean, what do you think? I doubt you guys have any stats on this, but you know, if you do, that'd be great. But what do you think is like the average age of somebody messing around on Zapper? Is it like 18, 28, 38? Because I mean, you guys are in a way really accelerating the adoption of crypto for younger people who want to get involved. I mean, there's no longer, you know, months of just messing around. You can go on Zapper. You could do quests to earn experience, to zap in and out, to understand these protocols. It really makes it easy.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say probably between 25 and 35, but I mean, what's interesting with crypto is most of it is pseudonymous or anonymous in nature. So it's very hard to know exactly who your users are. And actually, like, it's funny because we're actually doing an exercise, and I'm kind of sidetracking, but like trying to determine like who's the persona. Because when you build UX around a product, try to figure out what's the persona, typical person. And what we kind of ended up on is a pseudonymous Twitter account. We don't actually care who you are. We care about like your on-chain person, like pseudonym. And we're kind of shifting towards more of a pseudonymous economy. And it's not real, like, we don't care about what's your age, you know, what's your income in traditional where you live, but we care about your reputation in DeFi. And that's what I think is super interesting.
Do you think that, I guess the second and third questions for you are, I mean, what do people actually get by doing these quests? Because people are like all profit-oriented. Like, are they earning NFTs? Are they earning native tokens of a project they're interacting with? Or are they earning, you know, hopefully just knowledge as well?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what they're really earning is proof of, it's like this reputation that they're actually a hardcore Zapper user, and they're like an early Zapper user. Like, we're in the very early history of Zapper. We don't yet know what these badges or these levels might be used for in the future. And it's, where you kind of see it is like you're building your CV for Zapper. And I still don't know what that could be used in the future, but it's building up that reputation.
No, I totally agree. I mean, the whole idea of an on-chain CV is hilarious. I mean, we haven't seen a real one in a while. Do you think people actually get hired off of their Zapper history? I mean, it's already happening with other, it's like Atomic Blue. I forgot the name of it. I mean, DGen Score is obviously an obvious one.
Yeah. I've seen a few people like being hired to manage like people's wealth based on their Zapper history. So kind of seeing a glimpse of that, but I think the trend at large is like, and just even us hiring at Zapper, I think the CV is probably the thing we care the least about in the whole application. Honestly, I think we probably wouldn't even need it in most cases.
That makes sense. And I guess moving like beyond Quest, like, do you think that, or not beyond Quest, but do you think that the learning and the education that you offer will go beyond DeFi to NFTs too, or not so much?
Absolutely. And kind of to go back on an earlier question, which was, you know, what you're earning while doing the Quest, it's like a proof of work. It's a proof of work where you spend time on Zapper, you earn XP, and then you can mint NFTs. So kind of those NFTs are backed by all the work and time you spent being on Zapper. And going to your point on, like, are there things we can do on NFTs? I actually like have a whole thesis. It's not written down, but it's like, it's in my head, but around NFTs, where I think the future of finance is much weirder than we think. Right now we're still at the stage of transforming the horse carriage into a car, modeling the car after the horse carriage. Like, we're porting old models into DeFi, and those are good. A lot of them are very important financial primitives, but I think there's so many things that we could do in DeFi. And if you think about DeFi at its core, it's increasing the bandwidth of how we communicate value. It's increasing the expressibility of how we communicate value. If you think about media, right, and the internet, it used to be very expensive to broadcast information, you know, from yourself, right? Just very expensive. You know, you'd have to like buy the newspaper, like buy an ad somewhere. And now you could very cheaply broadcast information to the world. And to a similar extent, financially, very expensive to broadcast yourself. Very hard for you to have access to a bunch of different financial services, depending on where you live. DeFi increases your bandwidth, allows you to easily broadcast yourself to the world. And when you think about finance, you know, a lot of these things are kind of like abstractions of value, right? What they're actually transacting is time and work and people building stuff. And what we can have with DeFi is actually you can go down the stack and get close to the actual layer of value transfer. Like, for example, an essay that earns fees dynamically based on people that are reading it, instead of having like an IOU or like a stock that represents in that company, right, that somehow gets its value derived from that essay. So we're getting closer to like the source. And I think it's going to take time, but that's what, you know, DeFi enables long term. And I think there's going to be a big intersection between NFTs and DeFi where, you know, I could take my Charizard Pokemon card, you know, deposit, use it as collateral, make it work. Like, I have a bunch of things of value we all have, you know, in our homes, but we can't make them work. And we're starting to see those kind of assets digitally, and we'll start to being able to make them work and perhaps, you know, take a mortgage with your Charizard card or with your CryptoPunk.
Now, that's a fascinating thesis, Seb. I agree with all of it. I mean, I guess I'll throw a question your way. You can take it whichever way you want, but I guess, how far away are we from your vision there? And then to close the loop on like the on-chain resume item, you know, how do you link that to getting a job in crypto or to developing your own platform? Because it seems like the denser Zapper gets, you could tell, you know, who's kind of a degen, who's really a degen, and who's an OG. But how does that translate to like an actual work environment or an actual job?
That's a good question. I think it's tricky because, like, if there's someone applying, we don't want to like ask them for their Zapper address because it's like, it's kind of personal, right? But if we could, it could be a good way to kind of gauge
that ZK flop throwing up there.
Yeah. But you're kind of also opening yourself up to kind of judging the investments. It's like, really, you went in that farm?
You're like, in Shibu?
What were you thinking? Not hired.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right. It's hard. And, you know, just switching gears a bit, I mean, one of the cool things that I've personally found about Zapper is just the amount of, I guess, airdrops or yield farm rewards I just didn't even know I had. Is that a key feature you guys are seeing from your clients users?
Yeah, it is. And like I said earlier, we're trying to maximize the happy moments you have on Zapper and discovering an airdrop or, you know, something on Zapper that you didn't know you have, like discovering like a $50 bill in, you know, somewhere in your house. Like, it's it's fun. So to have that in Zapper also is a pretty good feeling. And often people will share about it. They'll share it on social media. Hey, I found this airdrop on Zapper. So yeah, it's always been important for us to, for you to be able to find like every, you know, loose penny.
I like that. And I should have asked this question earlier when I was asking about your target market, but is there any specificity around like your target users? Like, I feel like everybody says crypto is global, but in reality, you know, a lot of projects users are from, you know, a specific country, or, you know, then if we dial down, like the projects are focused on a specific, you know, chain, like you guys are very Ethereum focused. I guess the question is Zapper global? It's obvious, but I want to know if not. And then two, you know, when do you guys expand to like, you know, the Terra Lunas of the world, or, you know, go beyond ETH? I mean, you already are, but I guess the beyond layer one support.
Yeah. In our approach with DeFi, we want to be as agnostic as possible. And in terms of like how global we are, like I'd say almost every country in the world is represented through Zapper. Obviously, there's a few where it's very difficult to be able to have access to Zapper. But we obviously, North America, very big market, but we also have a lot of users from China. And we actually have, you know, Z on our team, who's really focused on our community in China and helping them. And it's really interesting to see the cultural differences between different countries. But also what's amazing is to see all these people from around the world using your product.
What are the cultural differences? I mean, because I was going to ask that. I mean, you know, full disclosure, we're invested in DBank as well, as you know. I think there'll be a couple front pages here, but I feel like there is a dichotomy in the global communities of uptake here. What are they up for?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like if you look at China, people will be looking to find yield, number one. That'll be the most important thing to find. And they'll maybe sacrifice a few different elements. Whereas, you know, here in North America, perhaps in, you know, the Western world, it'll be a bit different, where we kind of balance both the product and yield. But for them, it's just like finding the best yield, no matter what. Doesn't care which chain it lives on. There's not as much like maximalism in China. Like, we have a lot of like Ethereum maxis in North America, or like people that are just focus really on one chain over the other, but we have much less of that in China. Right there, it's the most important thing is like, where can I make, you know, the most money possible? And I'd say like that's mostly the cultural differences. I'm not saying that one approach is better than the other. It's just like different in how they approach the product, and their objectives are different too.
No, that's interesting. Switching gears a bit, Seb, you guys closed your Series A round. You raised a bunch of money, which is awesome. Congrats. I guess the question for you is, you know, where do you intend to spend this money to grow Zapper?
Yeah. So right now we don't have any revenue. We haven't built out our business model yet. And so this revenue is really helping us build out, you know, a full engineering team, be able to put out a mobile app, iOS and Android. We're also building the app store, which will allow community members to build protocol integrations directly on top of Zapper. And so it's really just increasing our bandwidth and allow us to do more of the things we've always wanted to do, but just have been kind of crunched on time.
Now, I'm super excited for the mobile app personally and for our fund. But the other side of it is just the app store sounds super interesting. Could you walk through that a bit?
Yeah. So one realization that is probably very obvious is that it's not sustainable for us to do all the protocol integrations that will exist. Like right now, it's as if we tried to integrate every website in the world. And right now it's manageable, but it's becoming, the obvious trend is that it's becoming less and less manageable. Like, we know that it's not sustainable long-term. So we're really, you know, building this app store where we would allow community members to actually build on top of Zapper and extend it the way they want. Also, a thing is, and we're kind of approaching in a similar way to Shopify. So if you're a merchant on Shopify, you can extend your e-commerce website through different plugins to fit kind of your use case. In a similar fashion, a financial dashboard is something that's very personal. Everyone has different use cases and they'll like more, some features more than the others. And so by having this app store, kind of allow the market to dictate which features should be built on Zapper, which protocol integrations, and then users of Zapper can kind of decide and, you know, customize their own, you know, financial dashboard.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, no, the community curation is key, whether you're looking for apps integrators, apps. So yep. Yeah, I really like that focus. And the other side is just the future of Zapper. Obviously, NFTs have taken by storm. There's a lot of things, I guess, we're waiting for, like, you know, real appraisals for NFTs. You know, Upshot's a good example. You know, crowdsource, you could, you know, pay to rate kind of thing and get a more accurate value of your NFTs. But where do you think Zapper plays into tracking and then letting people use their NFTs in ways we're not thinking about, I guess?
Yeah, so right now NFTs are still in this spot where it seems like the DeFi market and NFT market are diverging. So we're thinking about what are the places where they kind of converge and how could we allow our users to, you know, leverage what they have at NFTs. So like right now, you can only track, you can't do much with them. I'm of the firm belief, as I previously stated, that NFTs will play a big role in DeFi. And so there's a lot of things we want to do. Like one step is obviously like having the NFTs as those rewards in the quest, not really put in DeFi, but we have other ideas into, say for example, like you could have a piggy bank NFT and you put in DAI USDC, that DAI or USDC could be lent on Compound and Aave, and it kind of updates or makes your piggy bank NFT evolve or change in appearance. So that's kind of taking like some aspects from skeuomorphic design. Like everyone understands the concept of a piggy bank. You put money in it and it kind of like changes in appearance. And it can also be something that's cool to share and show people, and kind of also mixes some aspects from DeFi NFTs where you have an NFT that has some assets that's actually backing it.
Now, I think that's awesome. It really makes a lot of sense. And I just want to close out, Seb, with like, you know, let's talk about like horror stories, right? Like what could go wrong there? Are you concerned with any, I guess one other concern, we've covered a bunch, but one other concern is, do you think that there might be any, you know, front pages of DeFi that pop up that support, you know, non, like the other layer ones that you don't and catch you? Like, how do you think about competition on, I guess, other chains? Because it would be really hard to, you know, start yesterday and or start tomorrow and just get up to speed with all the integrations you have, because it's just daunting how many you have. It's wild.
Yeah. I mean, it would definitely be very scary to tackle. Like I'm often intimidated just by the amount of integrations we support. Even like sometimes we have to like update our own integrations, and like there's just so many that it's just a job in itself. But we definitely always see like DeFi is going to be multi-chain. I think Ethereum is going to be Manhattan. It's going to be the main hub, but there's going to be other chains for other use cases, and they're going to capture, you know, perhaps different user bases. And for us, it's very important to be able to support those people as well, because we want to support DeFi as a whole. Right now, what's been mostly the issue for us is bandwidth. And because some chains aren't EVM compatible, it isn't as easy as like, it's not like plug and play. And we built the entire Zapper stack to be fully EVM compatible. So we could add an EVM chain very easily, but for chains that aren't EVM compatible, it's a bit harder for us to do, but it's still very doable. It's just a question of allocation of resources. And yeah, I mean, we're always kind of looking at the activity, also taking the pulse from our community. Right now, what's interesting, and perhaps you could answer your question on this, like, it feels as though some communities are kind of building away and they're having like their own kind of closed ecosystems. Because initially, like a lot of our users, like, hey, you should add Phantom because I'm using, you know, Polygon, Ethereum, and Phantom. But like Terra, perhaps, and even Solana seem to capture user bases that aren't necessarily like overlapping. And so we can't just listen to the pulse from our community because perhaps they don't even use, you know, Solana or other chains, right? So, I mean, always something we're thinking about, but it would just be curious about that.
Yeah, no, I'll give a short answer because I want to focus on you, but I totally agree. I mean, I think a lot of the newer layer ones outside ETH have their own user bases, either you know, geographically or culturally or focused. I mean, Solana has a very, you know, DeFi finance, let's, you know, recreate Wall Street on Solana because they're attracting that SBF, FTX, traditional, you know, Wall Street people to a fast chain they could do whatever they want on. You know, Terra and Luna have a very specific kind of community there, right? Polkadot even has a very different community. Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways to slice and dice it, but it's good that you guys are open to it. And I guess just closing out, Seb, what's the roadmap on, I guess, what do you think is more important if you had limited dev resources? Not saying you do, but if you had to pick, would you rather support like Optimism, Starkware, the L2s on ETH, or would you rather go out and say, hey, let's support Solana, let's support Terra? Like, how do you decide? Because supporting a layer two is probably just as hard, if not, you know, supporting new layer one, I guess.
That's a really good question. It's an act of balancing both, like the Wayne Gretzky move. Right? Like you could say that Optimism, there's not much activity there yet, but if we're prepared and we think that there's going to be a lot of people, then it definitely becomes very valuable for us. That's what we did with Polygon. Like back in March, February, we actually started building the bridge. And at that time, there weren't that many people using Polygon, but we saw the fees spike and we're like, okay, we know the future is going to be multiple chains. Let's build out Zapper to be EVM compatible and have Polygon. The other side is you have a really big community of users being on it. It's kind of an act between, you know, going where the puck is going to be, also being able to target L1s that you think are going to sustain long-term and going to have a large user base. Because if you go into an L1, that's not going to sustain. And you could have done the Wayne Gretzky move. You should have done the Wayne Gretzky move. So it's kind of a careful act of balancing both with limited bandwidth.
That's awesome, Seb. It's really awesome having you on. I can't believe we waited so long to do this, but excited to download your mobile app hopefully soon. For those listening, just check out zapper.fi. You could track all your assets for expanding chains and apps. Seb, it's been awesome having you on, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tom. And my cat also says bye.
I love your cat, man. Yeah. So did I.
All right.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.